So the men paused indecisively as the light from the well grew stronger and the hitched horses pawed and whinnied in increasing frenzy. It was truly an awful moment, with terror in that ancient and accursed house itself. Four monstrous sets of fragments, two from the house and two from the well. In the woodshed behind, and that shaft of unknown and unholy iridescence from the slimy depths in front. Ami had restrained the driver on impulse, forgetting how uninjured he himself was after the clammy brushing of that coloured vapour in the attic room. But perhaps it is just as well that he acted as he did. No one will ever know what was abroad that night, and though the blasphemy from beyond was not as far hurt as any human of unweakened mind, there is no telling what it might not have done at that last moment. And with its seemingly increased strength and the special signs of purpose it was soon to display beneath the half-clouded moonlit sky. All at once, one of the detectives at the window gave a short, sharp gasp. The others looked at him, and then quickly followed his own gaze upward to the point at which its idle straying had been suddenly arrested. There was no need for words. What had been disputed in country gossip was disputable no longer, and it is because of that thing which every man of that party agreed in whispering later on that the strange days are never talked about in Arkham. It is necessary to premise that there was no wind at that hour of the evening. One did arise not long afterwards, but there was absolutely none then. Even the dry tips of the lingering hedge mustard grey and blighted, and the fringe on the roof of the standing Democrat wagon were unstirred. And yet, amid that tense, godless calm, the high, bare boughs of the tree in the yard were moving. They were twitching morbidly and spasmodically, clawing in convulsive and epileptic madness at the moonlit clouds, scratching impotently at the noxious air, as if jerked by some alien and bodiless line of linkage, with subterranean horrors writhing and struggling below the black roots. Not a man breathed for several seconds. Then a cloud of darker depth passed over the moon, and the silhouette of clutching branches faded out momentarily. At this, there was a general cry, muffled with awe, but husky and almost identical from every throat. For the terror had not faded with the silhouette, and in a fearsome instant of deeper darkness, the watcher saw wriggling at that treetop height thousand tiny points of faint and unhallowed radiance, tipping each bough like the fire at St. Elmo, or the flames that came down on the apostle's head at Pentecost. It was a monstrous constellation of unnatural light, like a glutted swarm of corpse-fed fireflies dancing hellish sarabands over an accursed marsh. And its colour was that nameless intrusion which Ami had come to recognise and dread. All the while the shaft of phosphorance from the well was gaining brighter and brighter, bringing to the mind of the huddled men a sense of doom and abnormality which far outraced any image their conscious minds could form. It was no longer shining out, it was pouring out. And as the shapeless stream of unplaceable colour left the well, it seemed to flow directly into the sky. The veterinary shivered and walked to the front door to drop the heavy extra bar across it. Ami shook no less and had to tug and point for lack of a controllable voice when he wished to draw notice to the groaning luminosity of the trees. The neighing and stamping of the horses had become utterly frightful, but not a soul of that group in the old house would have ventured forth for any earthly reward. With the moments, the shining of the trees increased, while their restless branches seemed to strain more and more towards verticality. The wood of the well sweep was shining now, and presently the policeman dumbly pointed to some wooden sheds and beehives near the stone wall on the west. They were commencing to shine too, though the tethered vehicles of the visitors seemed so far unaffected. Then there was a wild commotion and clopping in the road, and as Amy quenched the lamp for better seeing, they realised that the span of frantic greys had broken their sapling and run off with the Democrat wagon. The shock served to loosen several tongues, and embarrassed whispers were exchanged. "It spreads on everything organic that's been around here," muttered the medical examiner. No one replied, but the man who had been in the well gave a hint that his long pole must have stirred up something intangible. "It was awful," he added. "There was no bottom at all, just ooze and bubbles and the feeling of something lurking under there." Amy's horse still pawed and screamed deafeningly at the road outside and nearly drowned its owner's faint quaver as he mumbled his formless reflections. "It came from that stone. It growed down there. It got everything living. It fed itself on a mind and body, Thad and Myrny, Zenas and Nabby. Nahum was the last. They all drank the water. It got strong on them. It came from beyond, where things ain't like they be here. Now it's going home." At this point, as the column of unknown colour flared suddenly stronger and began to weave itself into fantastic suggestions of shape, which each spectator later described differently, there came from poor tethered hero such a sound as no man before or since ever heard from a horse. Every person in that low-pitched sitting room stopped his ears, and Amy turned away from the window in horror and nausea. Words could not convey it. When Amy looked out again, the hapless beast lay huddled inert in the moonlit ground between the splintered shafts of the buggy. That was the last of Hero till they buried him the next day. But the present was no time to mourn, for almost at this instant a detective silently called attention to something terrible in the very room with them. In the absence of the lamplight, it was clear that a faint phosphorus had begun to pervade the entire apartment. It glowed on the broad plank floor and the fragment of rag carpet and shimmered over the sashes of the small paned windows. It ran up and down the exposed corner post, coruscated about the shelf of mantle and infected the very doors and furniture. Every minute saw it strengthen. And at last it was very plain that healthy living things must leave that house. Amy shooed them the back door and the path up through the fields to the 10-acre pasture. They walked and stumbled as in a dream and did not dare look back till they were far away on the high ground. They were glad of the path, for they could not have gone the front way by that well. It was bad enough passing the glowing barns and sheds and those shining orchard trees with their gnarled, fiendish contours, but thank heaven the branches did their worst twisting high up. The moon went under some very black clouds as they crossed the rustic bridge over Chapman's Brook, and it was blind groping from there to the open meadows. When they looked back towards the valley and the distant gardener place at the bottom, they saw a fearsome sight. All the farm was shining with the hideous, unknown blend of colour. Trees, buildings, and even such grass and herbage as had not been wholly changed to lethal grey brittleness. The boughs were all straining skyward, tipped with tongues of foul flame, and lambent tricklings of the same monstrous fire were creeping about the ridgepoles of the house, barn, and sheds. It was a scene from a vision of Fuseli, and over all the rest reigned that riot of luminous amorphousness, the alien and undimensional rainbow of cryptic poison from the well. Seething, feeling, lapping, reaching, scintillating, straining, and malignly bubbling in its cosmic and unrecognisable chromaticism. Then, without warning, the hideous thing shot vertically up towards the sky like a rocket or meteor, leaving behind no trail and disappearing through a round and curiously regular hole in the clouds before any man could gasp or cry out. No watcher can ever forget that sight, and Amy stared blankly at the stars of Cygnus, Deneb twinkling above the others, where the unknown colour had melted into the Milky Way. but his gaze was the next moment caught swiftly to earth by the crackling in the valley. It was just that. Only a wooden ripping and crackling, and not an explosion as so many other that the party vowed. Yet the outcome was the same, for in one feverish, kaleidoscopic instant there burst up from that doomed and accursed farm a gleamingly eruptive cataclysm of unnatural sparks and substance, blurring the glance of the few who saw it, and sending forth to the zenith a bombarding cloudburst of such coloured and fantastic fragments as our universe must needs disown. Through quickly reclosing vapours, they followed the great morbidity that had vanished, and in another second they had vanished too. Behind and below was only a darkness to which the men dared not return, and all about was a mounting wind which seemed to sweep down in black, frore gusts from interstellar space. It shrieked and howled and lashed the fields and distorted woods in a mad, cosmic frenzy, till stood the trembling party realized it would be of no use waiting for the moon to shew what was left down there at Nahum's. Too awed even to hint theories, the seven shaking men trudged back towards Arkham by the north road. Amy was worse than his fellows and begged them to see him inside his own kitchen instead of keeping straight onto town. He did not wish to cross the nighted, wind-whipped woods alone to his home on the main road, for he had an added shock that the others were spared and was crushed forever with a brooding fear he dared not even mention for many years to come. As the rest of the watchers on that tempestuous hill had stolidly set their faces towards the road, Amy had looked back an instant at the shadowed valley of desolation so lately sheltering his ill-starred friend. And from that stricken, faraway spot he had seen something feebly rise, only to sink down again upon the place from which the great shapeless horror had shot into the sky. It was just a colour, but not any colour of our earth or heavens, and because Amy recognised that colour and knew that this last faint remnant must still lurk down there in the well, he has never been quite right since. Amy would never go near the place again. It is over half a century now since the horror happened, but he has never been there and will be glad when the new reservoir blots it out. I should be glad too, for I do not like the way the sunlight changed colour around the mouth of that abandoned well I passed. I hope the water will always be very deep, but even so I shall never drink it. I do not think I shall visit the Arkham country hereafter. Three of the men who had been with Amy returned the next morning to see the ruins by daylight, but there were not any real ruins, only the bricks of the chimney, the stones of the cellar, some mineral and metallic litter here and there, and the rim of that nefandous well. Save for Amy's dead horse, which they towed away and buried, and the buggy which they shortly returned to him, everything that had ever been living had gone. 5 eldritch acres of dusty grey desert remained, nor has anything ever grown there since. To this day it sprawls open to the sky like a great spot eaten by acid in the woods and fields, and the few who have ever dared glimpse it in spite of the rural tales have named it the Blasted Heath. The rural tales are queer. They might be even queerer if city men, college chemists, could be interested enough to analyse the water from that disused well, or the grey dust that no wind seems to ever to disperse. Botanists, too, ought to study the stunted flora on the borders of that spot, for they might shed light on the country notion that the blight is spreading, little by little, perhaps an inch a year. People say the colour of the neighbouring herbage is not quite right in the spring, and that wild things leave queer prints in the light winter snow. Snow never seems quite so heavy on the Blasted Heath as it is elsewhere. Horses, the few that are left in this motor age, grow skittish in the silent valley, and hunters cannot depend on their dogs too near the splotch of greyish dust. They say that the mental influences are very bad too. Numbers went queer in the years after Nahum's taking, and always they lack the power to get away. and the stronger-minded folk all left the region, and only the foreigners tried to live in the crumbling old homesteads. They could not stay, though, and one sometimes wonders what insight beyond ours their wild, weird stories of whispered magic have given them. Their dreams at night, they protest, are very horrible in that grotesque country, and surely the very look of the dark realm is enough to stir a morbid fancy. No traveller has ever escaped a sense of strangeness in those deep ravines, and artists shiver as they paint thick woods whose mystery is as much of the spirit as of the eye. I myself am curious about the sensation I derive from my one lone walk before Ami told me his tale. When twilight came, I had vaguely wished some clouds would gather, for an odd timidity about the deep skyey voids above had crept into my soul. Do not ask me for my opinion. I do not know, that is all. There was no one but Ami to question, for Arkham people will not talk about the strange days, and all three professors who saw the aerolite and its coloured globule are dead. There are other globules, depend on that. One must have fed itself and escaped, and probably there was another which was too late. No doubt it is still down the well. I know there was something wrong with the sunlight I saw above that miasmal brink. The rustics say the light creeps an inch a year, so perhaps there is a kind of growth or nourishment even now. But whatever demon hatchling is there, it must be tethered to something, or else it would quickly spread. Is it fastened to the roots of those trees that claw the air? One of the current Arkham tales is about fat oaks that shine and move as they ought not do at night. What it is, only God knows. In terms of matter, I suppose the thing Ami described would be called a gas, but this gas obeyed laws that have not of our cosmos. This was no fruit of such worlds and suns as shine on the telescopes and photographic plates of our observatories. This was no breath from the skies whose motions and dimensions our astronomers measure or deem too vast to measure. It was just a colour out of space, a frightful messenger from unformed realms of infinity beyond all nature as we know it. From realms whose mere existence stuns the brain and numbs us with the black extra-cosmic gulfs it throws open before our frenzied eyes. I doubt very much if Ami consciously lied to me, and I do not think his tale was all a freak of madness as the town had forewarned. Something terrible came to the hills and valleys on that meteor, and something terrible, though I know not in what proportion, still remains. I should be glad to see the water come. Meanwhile, I hope nothing will happen to Ami. He saw so much of the thing, and its influence was so insidious. Why, he has never been able to move away. How clearly he recalled those dying words of Nahum's. Can't get away, draws ye. You know summit's coming, but tain't no use. Ami is such a good old man. When the reservoir gang gets to work, I must write the chief engineer to keep a sharp watch on him. I would hate to think of him as the grey, twisted, brittle monstrosity which persists more and more in troubling my sleep.